to...
Okay, we're rolling now.
Okay.
So we can kind of catch... We're talking about Game of Thrones. And I was asking Greg questions like, you know, should I... What should I stay ahead on? Should the audiobook or the book stay in front of the show, the HBO show, or should I keep the show in front of the book? And you said the book should go in front of the show.
Yes, I completely think the book should go in front of the show. Having read the books, and it's not about necessarily knowing what's coming. It's more about being able to... Look, the books just take longer than the show, period. And, mm-hmm. and they're more expansive, and they... And you can understand certain things that are going on in the show more because you've read the books.
Well, I mean, I think the first book, audiobook, I think is like 29 hours, right?
Yeah. These are long.
That would be like 29 episodes for a season, which you just can't do. So
these are, you hear something?
I thought one ear was going foggy on the other ear, but I guess it's just probably my ears and not the headphones.
The books are, I've considered more concept. I mean, the third book is huge. The last book is huge. These are large, large books. And I think once you get into them, you're going to want to keep...
Oh, there we go. There's the problem.
Right there. That's just your headset connection. Amazon Anonymous.
Da-da-da-da-da-da. All right. So what did you find? You found something awesome you were all excited about.
Yeah, the Oster Buffet Server, stainless steel.
Okay, okay.
It's this cool-looking thing. I mean, I don't really know if I'd ever have use for it, but it's a cool... If you have company over often, or if you feel like, you know, you're making things that work in a buffet-type situation, this is a really good way to keep them heated and... It's not that expensive. I think it's a cool idea to sort of give, you know, kind of restaurant-y thing, but allow, you know, it definitely, what's the best thing I can, the worst thing I can say about it is that it definitely goes against the Alton Brown no unitasker thing.
Right, right.
Which I don't buy. I'm not part of his cult of unitaskers on that. I'm fine with a unitasker if it gets the job done.
If nothing else can do the job, right? I mean...
No, I think that sometimes unitaskers will do the job better than a multitasker.
Okay, yeah. Sure, okay.
But, you know, as a unitasker, it's a really cool one, and it's not that really expensive, and I think it has a... It's cool to give that option to people, so... Yeah.
All right, so my item this week, there was a lot of games and toys bought this week. We got a Jenga, this isn't my item, but, you know, someone bought a Jenga, someone bought Uno, you know, like all kinds of old school games. But my item of the week is the Leatherman 830684 Charge TTI multi-tool with leather nylon combination sheath and gift tin. Not only was it the biggest ticket item bought since the last show, but since I'm a camper, I own a Leatherman. I am a big fan of the multi-tool. Mm-hmm. It's not a unitasker.
No, it's not.
And they're made in the USA, so that is nice also. This is a much fancier Leatherman than I have. It has...
various screwdrivers on it.
Let's see. How many... I want to get to the description and get to the pieces and stuff. But the Google pages or the Amazon page is confounding me.
Let's see more product details.
I don't want reviews.
Well, I'm just looking at the picture, and the picture has a lot of stuff in
it. So we got, there's a bunch of pictures. Pull up a big picture. We got the can opener / bottle opener. We got a fancy little Phillips screwdriver.
Which you can, looks like it has a detachable head, so it has a bunch of different heads.
Probably. Oh, it's probably like a hex thing where you can put any kind of bit in.
I have a Swiss Army knife that has the same sort of thing.
Oh, right? I haven't seen those yet. You know, I haven't, all my knives and Leathermans are from the 1990s.
I see.
So, ancient shit.
It's a saw, has a file, has a blade.
Scissors, got a little, got a big screwdriver, a little screwdriver, saw. All kinds of fun stuff. And, of course, needle-nose pliers and a cutter. Leatherman tools are not the only tool. They're not the best tool in the world, but if you are need a bunch of tools in one small package. It's definitely the way to go.
Yeah.
And probably beat a Swiss Army knife in many cases because pliers are quite useful.
Yes. Yes, they are. And the cheapo plier-ish type things you get in the Swiss Army knife are not that handy. Yeah, I like the Leatherman design more than I like the Swiss Army knife design.
Now, there is another tool like a Leatherman called a Gerber. Those things are awesome because they don't do the butterfly swing out. They can slide up. I never owned a Gerber. My buddy from Scouts, the best man at my wedding, Dave. Is he been on the show? Ever have Dave on the show?
No, he has not been on the show.
He listens to the show. But Gerber makes a multi-tool. And those things, well, this, no, I say that it's not butterfly. The first one they find on Amazon's a butterfly. The one he had was kind of a slide out where you could slide the plier mechanism out of the handle. Gerber makes awesome knives. Bear Grylls sponsors a whole bunch of Gerber shit. That's all you can find is the Bear Grylls.
Bear Grylls is like the worst Survivor. If you're going to watch a Survivor show, watch Survivor Man. That's awesome. Yes.
Yeah, I like Les Stroud. But so here's a Gerber item. It's the Gerber 31-001773 Bear Grylls Survival Bracelet. So, you know, they're all about, you know, Bear Grylls likes having all this, like, parachute cord wrapped up into a cute little bracelet or necklace or shit. So this is a bunch of, like, probably about 15 feet of parachute cord all woven, braided into a little bracelet. $10.
I like fire starter tools. Those are cool. I have one.
Oh, like the fire steels?
Yeah.
Some of those are pretty sweet.
Even though I have no use for it, I have one just because it's like $12. Like, yeah. But,
speaking of Survivor stuff, 4th of July, I was talking with one of the neighbors. He told me about this show that's on Discovery called Naked and Afraid.
Yeah, I heard that show sucks.
It doesn't suck. It's not the best show, but it is hardcore survival. It's one of the most, I mean, Les Stroud would cry if he had to do this shit.
Well, Les Stroud gives you an entertaining show with survival. I mean, I'm not watching it because I'm really that interested in how survival thing, in how to do survival things. I'm watching it because it's entertaining.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it sucks, but so Naked and Afraid is a guy and a girl. They sign up for a 21-day expedition, and they get almost nothing. They get out of the car, they take off all their clothes, and the blocks start blurring out their naughty bits. And they meet, and where they meet, there just happens to be a tree with those two bags, and each people gets to bring one thing. So, like in the first show I watched, the guy brought a fire starter, and the girl brought a machete. In the second show, the guy brought a knife, big marine knife, and the girl bought a little pot, you know, and then they have to survive. And
for 21 days?
21 days.
They don't survive for 21 days.
They do. Well, they do. It's pretty, it's hard. It's rough. You can appreciate like how much it sucks. The second episode of the season, they were in the African savannah, and there's, what are the trees that the giraffes eat that have the big spikes on them? The acacia? Is that what it is?
I guess
acacia
so,
trees? Yeah. So the spikes drop. These guys are trying to walk barefoot, and like every step is like spikes in the feet. Like, yeah. Oh, I couldn't imagine. The dude, so like actually the guy, they should have been, there's like no prize. There's no prize for lasting 21 days, which sucks. Hopefully they get a stipend or something. Hopefully they get
to,
paid.
They're on TV. They get something, but hopefully they get not paid. Much.
But there's no prize. The dude had an infection in his foot from these spikes, and they pulled him out with 5 days to go, took him to a medical tent. They drained his foot, pulled the thorns out, gave him a ton of antibiotics, and he got to finish out his 5 days. Which is like, oh, that, like on Survivor, it's like, you get medical help, you're out, you know? That's like, you can't do that. You can't go to the tent and get shit and come back.
Yeah, what's the point if you don't get any?
The people on the show are hardcore survivalist type people, you know, and they're looking for a challenge. That's why they do the show. The guy in the first two episodes is the asshole alpha male, you know, hopefully that's not a theme of the show. I mean, I can see why they cast it because it makes for more conflict in the show. But, you know, that's the thing. That's the thing that sucks about it is they keep casting this asshole alpha male for the first two episodes. The third episode, I believe, is aired. I didn't watch that yet. Oh, it's hardcore survival, though. I mean, out of anything on TV, that's the hardest thing. Survivor Man's probably better. This is harder. Survivor Man's a better show. This is a harder experience for the people on the show.
Okay.
So my mom was bitching about the show Siberia.
The show Siberia.
I guess you don't even know about this. There's a scripted drama on summer run on one of the main networks. NBC, CBS, one of those two. But it's a scripted show that plays like a reality show with like Lost type goofy shit going on it. Like, you know, like paranormal, psycho, you know, mystical shit. And it plays like a reality show where people are dying and shit like that. And like the network's like not saying, hey, this is scripted. This is like people are watching this thing and it's like real shit. I don't know, that's a little nuts. I don't know what your opinion on that is. I was hoping you would help me with the conversation here.
I've never heard of it, so I don't have much to say on it because I don't know.
What about the theory about, like, you know, War of the Worlds, you know, radio drama where people think, like, the world's ending, like, where people watching these people, they think they're actually dying?
It's been done before. People are watching people who think they're actually dying, and that's the show? Is you're watching people who are watching people who think they're actually dying?
No. You're watching what you think is a reality show where someone dies, but it's all scripted drama.
Oh. I don't know. It had to be some really good writers to pull that off.
I haven't watched it. I have no idea. My mom was all pissed that, like, she was watching this and then found out it was scripted.
Oh.
Like, my dad's like, but this something happened. My mom's like, it's all scripted. It didn't happen. She didn't win that shit, you know?
So it's sort of, it's a...
It's
a drama about a reality show.
A reality show that has, like, paranormal Lost type shit in it.
Yeah.
So, like, they're in Siberia and, like, crazy shit starts happening, like, because of
Tunguska. But it's played as if it were a reality show in terms of the way it's shot. Yeah. In terms of the way it's written. Well, that's kind of an interesting concept, or at least the concept of, okay, take the reality show aesthetic and apply it.
I mean,
it
it's almost like found footage, right? I mean, it's a little bit like that. Yeah. It's kind of like Chronicle.
Right.
Or, what was the good one? The one with the aliens.
Cloverfield.
No, well, there's that one, but what was the recent one? The House in the Woods. That wasn't really found footage, I guess. No.
Wait, Cabin in the Woods? No, that was not found footage. That was not found footage.
No, Chronicle was, though.
The Cloverfield was the one that really kind of jump-started that. Well, actually, what jump-started that was Blair Witch Project.
Mm-hmm.
And then Cloverfield was kind of the...
I saw Blair Witch in the theater when it first came out. And, you know, for its time, it was like, you know, it got your heart beating. It was like, whoa. It's like, feels so real. You knew it was a movie, but it's like, oh, it just feels so real. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing that this Siberia is putting on, right? It's like playing as if it was real.
It's a reasonable enough concept, but like I said, I mean, you have to have really good writers and directors and people behind the scenes to make that work. Mm-hmm. Just like, I mean, why is TV getting so good now? And why is TV also terrible now? Well, because people have had a lot of time to figure out TV. They had a lot more time to figure out film. That's why film got really good. And then
put the sound bed on.
What sound? Oh,
coffee.
Hold on a minute. Okay, gotta turn up my sound.
I'm just let this roll for a little bit. Finish what you're saying.
TV has had a lot of time to get good, and they've really been able to master certain genres. New genres that are popping up, they have not been able to master. They will. Film is an example of a medium that's been around, and things were mastered, and then new things needed to be mastered again. Then you had masters come along, and so, like, Spielberg mastered sort of the blockbuster, the summer blockbuster. And then people started to take variation of the theme, and it got mm-hmm. harder and harder. And then so they got various different pieces they took of Blackfire. So now you have these Michael Bay ridiculous stuff for Man of Steel, which was terrible. Man of Steel was an awful... I can't listen to this crap.
So it doesn't make Greg more creative. There's a study that background noise around 70 dB makes you create.
No, I buy that it would work if you're doing stuff alone, but if you're in a conversation, it's hard.
And a coffee shop, on average, a busy coffee shop, is that 70 dB noise. And it's kind of like, oh, that's why mm-hmm. all this, creativeness, all this work is done in coffee shops.
Well,
so there's a website called Coffeetivity.
Yeah, it's similar to me listening to that pink noise stuff, right? Because I didn't want to be, the work noises were too... They weren't like random enough mm-hmm. or stochastic enough for me to blast my mind, and silence wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But the pink noise was random and stochastic enough, but along a certain area that I could still
see. I didn't like the pink noise as much as I liked rainstorms. Rainstorms is a similar noise, random noise, but I liked the thunder. I liked the. The wind, I like the rainstorm stuff. It can get, 12 hours of rainstorms on YouTube as well.
I think I like the pink noise more because it was stochastic, but it wasn't totally. So, it was just like, I'm really more sensitive, the dropping of the dropping a spoon or something and making that noise, mm-hmm. that would distract me more, whereas everything on the pink noise is just sort of a level thing, which is... Mm-hmm. Small variations enough that it's not the same one tone,
right?
But it's all along the same sort of frequency range, and that's better for me, I think.
I'm glad you turned around the pink noise because you were on white noise until I turned you on to the pink noise.
Yeah, once you show me the difference between white noise and pink noise is definitely the
not as harsh.
Yeah,
cool. All right, so let's see. I got. Did you see the GABF? The Brewers registration sold out in 2 hours.
No.
So in less than 2 hours, 2 hours where they had website problems, you make me stop right now mid thought.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. All right, so I forget exactly where I left off there.
You're talking about the JBF selling out in 2 hours.
Yeah, so the brewer registration. Last year it took 2 days, so brewers had plenty of time if they were somewhat on the ball. This time... Brewers are having problems with the website. Brewers came in 2.5 hours later. All you sign up was the waiting list. So it's interesting. I think they were taking like close to 600 brewers this year. Less than 2 hours, poof, gone. Like Weyerbacher, Nodding Head, slow on the ball. Didn't, they're not going to be at the GABF.
Wow.
They were Chris from Weyerbacher was like pretty upset. Like, what? Like, I can't get in? What? But
there are a lot more breweries around now. I mean, that's the blessing and the curse, right? Your Brewer Association, goes on about how many more brewers there are now in the United States. Well, the GABF has a limited amount of space.
A quarter of breweries can still go to the GABF, and those quarter are registered in less than 2 hours. Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, it'd be interesting to see like who's notably missing from the GABF because they, didn't start. I don't know what time of the day the registration started, but like West Coast, didn't get in right at breakfast. They came in a little bit later in the day and boom, no spots left.
Well, no, I mean, the Brewer Association is in Denver, so I doubt they started something right at East Coast time.
Yeah, so... I don't know. It just seems like when spots sell out that fast, there's growing pains, right? You can't grow to a 2,000 brewery festival right away. You got to work up to it. But it's just like, oh man, there's just crazy demand here. People want to go to the GABF, and 600 spots isn't enough anymore.
It makes it interesting because that means that when they are doing medals, they're only doing it from a quarter of the breweries that are out there.
I think so. There's breweries that exhibit and there's breweries that enter, and not everyone who exhibits enters.
Not everyone.
So not everyone who enters exhibits.
Okay.
Right? So you can enter the competition, but not be at the brewer, not at the festival.
Okay.
I think this 600 is entries, but I'm not positive on that. I think it could be, it would make more sense if it was just exhibits, right? Why limit the entries?
Right, right.
But I don't know.
You stop being really... Well, you limit the entries because you can't drink 2,000 IPAs.
Yeah. You can't judge, yeah. But it's not the entries, it's the brewery entrance, right? Mm-hmm. That's what would be limited. You know, the brewer entrance could still enter a bunch of different categories, right? So,
yeah, I don't know...
I'd have to look into that. I almost.
I mean, how can you fit 2,000? I mean, how can you fit that? You know, 2,000 breweries in it.
Well, the Denver Convention Center wasn't. They didn't use the whole thing. There was still that back wall that had a partition up. Right?
It costs money to put up these kind of events, mm-hmm. and just and you know, the Brewer Association is providing a lot of money just to allow people to do this. I mean, I'm sure that the brewers give some money to it, but probably not to cover costs completely. No, they can. They probably do.
I'd hate to.
They cover their costs from sponsors and other stuff, I'm sure. But just for being a brewer, I bet they give you a little bit of a deal. Why wouldn't they? They do it for us.
I'd hate to speculate on the economics of how that all works out. You know, the Brewer Association needs funds to do their, you know, their legislative stuff, their this, their that, right? So it's got to be a fundraiser at some point. I mean, that's the biggest event of the year. If they're not making money on it, I'd be shocked, right?
What?
Where do they make their money if not, you know? I know they don't make the money on Savor.
Right.
They don't make their money on American Homebrewers Conference, the Homebrewers Conference. You know, so...
I think they get a lot
of... CBC probably makes a lot of money.
They get a lot of big sponsors for the GABF, and, you know, the big ones, you know, Budweiser and stuff, are still go to that, and I'm sure they put up a lot of money to put up the huge displays.
Yeah.
Okay. What else you got?
I got... Do you know drawing pictures of comfort food improves your mood by up to 23%? If you draw a picture of pizza...
Mm-hmm.
You'll feel 23% better. If you draw a picture of a cupcake, you'll feel 21% better.
I think it's interesting that you can quantify that.
If you draw healthy foods, you only get if you draw broccoli, you only get like a 1% uptick on how you feel.
That's a cultural thing.
How's that pizza making you feel?
Only about 20%
better. Exactly. Here, I'm going to draw me a cupcake because I want to feel better. I'm going to draw some cupcakes. How about a beer? Let's see. I'm going to draw a beer.
I find it interesting, you know, obviously the quantification scheme is ridiculous.
Yeah, how much better you feel.
Yeah. But it's probably more along the lines of 20% of people reported being, on average, reported feeling better.
I didn't actually look into the, you know, the rigorous test of this thing. I just heard the blurb. It was at the end of Marketplace or something talking about it, you know. So I guess the research was done, but yeah, when I heard the 23% better than what? Better than you were before? Like, what's 100% better than you were before? Is that when you just like blow your jizz all over the place?
I don't know. So it's like if your dog dies, what, draw a pizza and everything will be better? Just don't draw broccoli?
I mean, I think, you know, what comes out of this, if you're having a shitty day, scribble some comfort food.
Well, there's a reason why it's called comfort food, right? Because when you eat it, you feel better.
Mm-hmm.
You feel more home. You feel it's like a warm hug. And so maybe just the association, just the visual association, mm-hmm. applies a little bit of that power that it has. Not as if you're eating the pizza, but as if you're looking at the pizza, your cupcake, or your beer, or mm-hmm. your broccoli. Yeah. No one's going to be like, oh, you feel bad. That sucks. Here, have some broccoli. It'll make you feel better.
So here's something Allie said the other day. Do you know why I'm smart? Heather says, why? Because you picked the right baby.
Okay.
So I thought this was fascinating, right? Because she associated her... as being with us and the baby that was picked provided the traits.
Well, I like the idea that she sort of thinks it's like a buffet, and you went there and you were like...
But it's not like if we didn't pick her, she would be someone else's kid. She would always be our kid, just a dumber version of her kid if we picked the different
baby. Is that what you got out of it?
That's what I got out of it.
I sort of think it's like you could have picked another baby, but you picked me. You picked the smart one.
No, she said, you know why I'm so smart.
Right. I'm so smart because you picked the right baby as opposed to picking the wrong baby, which would have been a dumber version of me.
Well, she still would have been smart, though. She just would have been someone else's baby.
I don't know. You have to ask her.
I'm interpreting it in a way. I'm only bringing this up because it's this philosophical thing where it seemed like she had her traits separate from her family, right? Like, she was always going to... We were always... There was no... Like, she didn't conceive that we couldn't be her parents, right? Mm-hmm. But she conceived that her skills, her traits, could have been different, right? If we picked a different baby.
What does that mean, pick a different baby?
Well, it's kind of a gray thing. You just have to figure out what a five-year-old means.
Yeah, is that there were a whole bunch of babies on a list.
But it's
and you picked the one. Now, anyone you picked would have been Allison, but they would have been a dumber version
they would have re-rolled their dice and got different traits,
but
right?
They all would have been Allison.
Yeah.
As opposed to the idea that there's a chart full of babies and only one of them was Allison.
Right. They all would have been Allison, but we rolled some dice and got a really good roll. That's what I heard.
I tend to think that babies are what's described like babies, like toddlers / young children like Allison would apply to more of a mind-body dualism idea, which is the idea that they are somewhat separate from their bodies, and that she is sort of a separate spirit that embodies that body. I don't think she looks at it as just one system. I think she looks at it as her mind is separate from her.
Well, that kind of... I mean, well, it depends on where the traits are attached, to the mind or to the body, right? Because what I heard was what you said, but the traits or skills are attached to the body, right? And she would always be our child, but the traits were picked, right? We picked a smart smart kid, right? And then so Allison was then a smart kid.
So you made the right roll, essentially.
I had a good roll.
You rolled
the
right dice.
Yes. Yes, her intelligence was a very high score. Her dexterity was good. Her fortitude was good. You know, all that.
We call it constitution in D&D.
Constitution. That's what I was trying to think of. Constitution. Yes. There's one other thing I was going to bring up about that, though. It was... what was it? It was... I lost it. I had something in mind that I wanted to bring up next. But
well, I need to use the facilities, and then we're going to get into some shit. So tell them what you told me.
Which one? Which part? Oh, the Allison thing?
Yeah.
So she said we picked the right baby for her, and that I believe she told Heather that we picked the wrong baby for Max.
Which means that it's, like I said to Jeff, it's much more it's much less philosophical than it is just plain old sibling rivalry. So we are in a philosophical mood, so of course we're going to be philosophical about it, but she just wants to be like, I'm better than Max.
Pretty much. That's a good point.
Okay, so in the past couple of days, I've been exploring, reading lots of things and exploring this idea, which is hard to explain, but I'll give it my best. It's I don't have any proof of this. I don't have much in the way of evidence except for correlation to some kind of out there physics ideas. Nothing that's been proven by experiment. I don't know how to prove my experiment.
Don't let me forget to talk about the one thing I have left. It's the best thing ever, but I don't want to interrupt you. other than the
other than of me.
Yes.
Okay. But so the idea here, and I tweeted about it. And not many people follow my Twitter feed, so I'm not surprised many people saw it. But time is different than other dimensions. Time, to describe time as a dimension is something of a misnomer. And why do I say that? Well, because let's do a thought experiment here. You're out in intergalactic space, blindfolded. You can't see. What are the dimensions that we understand? Up, down, left, right, you know, length, width, height. Do those make sense if you're blindfolded in interstellar space? How can you tell what is up and what is down?
Well, I'll argue they still do make sense, right? Because you have a reference to...
No, you're blindfolded. You have no reference.
You have a reference on your body. So I'm blindfolded. I can still put my arm next to my ear and call that up. I can put my arm down by my hip and call that down.
But if you're... let's say you're rotating...
You're talking about a frame of reference, though. And your frame of reference is your head. You know, your mind's eye. And so there still is a frame. I'm sorry to throw a monkey wrench into your argument here, but I would argue that I'm floating in interstellar space and, you know, up, that way, down, that way, left, that way, right, that way.
Okay, but you would not have an independent way. Excuse me. An independent may not be the right way to put it, but... I see what you're saying. You can use yourself as a reference point, but...
And what's wrong with that? I'm sorry. It's not where you wanted to go, but you're going to have to defend this one.
No, I understand where you're coming from, but let me change the situation slightly, okay? You're in a box in interstellar space. You can see... There are lights on, but the box is a square. It's the same in all directions. Maybe it's a sphere even. Let's put it that way.
Okay. That would be more disorienting, the sphere.
And
a perfectly smooth sphere?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. There'd be no inference of any cardinal point.
Right. However, there is a cardinal direction of time, even in this area. There is... What happened before and what happened after.
Your analogy is getting better.
You can tell a difference. So, the dimensions that we see are aspects of being essentially nearby a large amount of energy. One way or another. Either it's a large amount of energy that is compressed into matter and becomes gravity. So you're on the Earth. You're nearby basically a large amount of energy, which is compressed into matter in terms of the Earth. You now have a cardinality. You have up and down, left, right, forward and backward. You have those directions if you're on Earth. Whereas in that sphere in space, you would not have those directions. It's time.
I'm still going to nitpick about the up, down, left, right. Because you still evolved as a human. You still have... up from, you know, your shoulder to your head,
right.
Down from your shoulder to your hip, left, you know, you still have that. So even in a sphere, so you're talking about on a greater scale, what is the natural up, right? But there is no natural up when you're on a massive object either, you know, when you're on...
Well, it's just relativity, relative to the massive object.
I'm going to examine the thought that there's no difference floating in a sphere with no cardinal directionality and the random chance of which angle on the planet you're standing. You know, it's...
Well, that's kind of the point. There isn't a difference. The only difference is a perceived difference because you're closer to the planet as opposed to whether you're in that sphere. It's a perceived difference, but it's not an actual difference. It's not a difference that is quantifiable in the way that...
It's not perceived either
because...
Yeah, I was looking at... Well, we're looking at several different layers here, right? There's the within a foot of your body. There's within 100 feet of your body, and there's within, you know, 1,000 miles of your body type thing, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out, like, which plane I'm talking on right now. Maybe I forgot exactly which part of what you're arguing. The nuance of your argument that I was about to rebut, I have forgotten.
Okay. The point I'm trying to make is that there is a strange cardinality to time, which there isn't to the other dimensions, which shows
I don't disagree with this part. Want to make sure the rest of your argument is sturdy enough.
Which shows that there's a difference between time and the other dimensions in some way, and we don't know exactly what it is. And the reason why people talk about time being another dimension, like up, down, whatever, is because we can geometrically define space in that way. It makes geometric sense to define space as a geometric object with this fourth dimension. But does that actually follow? Well, no, not really. Because I'll give you an example from really easy, well, not easy, but really apparent maths. What is I?
Measure of time.
Well, what is I, though?
A variable. I don't know.
Square root of negative one. Right. Okay. It's an imaginary number. Yeah. Right. Like you said, it's on this imaginary thing. What does that mean? That means that you can never actually measure I. I has to do with rotation. It has to do with sinusoidal wave structure. It has to do with understanding the dynamics of a system in rotation. You use I to come up with an answer for problems, but you can never actually measure I, because I would never be a measurement. You would never actually measure something that's an imaginary number. But you use I as a tool, because it works, because it gives you the right answer. Virtual particles are a very similar phenomenon in particle physics. Virtual particles are very much like I. You never actually measure virtual particles. They don't exist in terms of something that you can measure, but you can use it as a tool to understand the dynamic system in this virtual particle sense. I can explain to you where it comes from, but that's not important right now. What's important, though, is that there are these things we use as tools that we can't actually measure, and that it's questionable as to whether you can actually say they exist or not.
Okay.
Time falls along that same sort of idea. Really, it's the measurement of time itself that is the problem here. Because we know that there is something about being close to things that are high energy,
well, I mean,
and the way in which time flows.
Well, time is... You can't measure time unless there was something in your sphere of reference that repeats. Right? You can't measure the passage of time unless there was atoms oscillating or light moving or something like that, right? If you were in a completely empty part of space, or if you were trying to observe a completely empty part of space,
then you can't measure time because there's nothing time, going on.
So when you listen to Neil deGrasse Tyson, at first glance you hear him say time doesn't exist because there's nothing to measure. Time does pass. You just can't measure it because there's nothing that's periodic. You need something periodic.
Are we sure that time passes? I mean, we only want to infer that time passes, but we can't actually say it does pass if there is nothing happening.
If there is nothing happening in a piece of space, but how does it stay? Okay, so I don't have the answer. Question is, how does that piece of space stay consistent with the adjacent piece of space that has something in it?
And that's where we get to this idea, which is that time is not a dimension, but better understood as a force, an entropic force. And the entropic force is stronger when there is more things there, more energy there. So you have this strange effect where when there are a lot of things together, more stuff happens. More time passes in a very strange way. Time actually dips into slower methods because there's so much more happening in very high energy situations or, you know, high gravitational situations, which are equivalent.
So sounds like time is more equivalent to gravity.
Well, time is gravity. That's already been shown. That's general relativity. Time and gravity are equivalent. But the point of special relativity and other general relativity is that gravity and acceleration are equivalent as well. And it's really just about energy. It's really just about how much energy is in the system.
Well, gravity and acceleration makes sense, right? You're in a car, you have G-forces. You could stand on the seat of your car if you're going fast enough, right? And, you know, I mean, most people can intuit, you know, that, right? You know, the whole... Anyone who's ridden on a rotor at an amusement park, right, where the wall floor drops out and you're against the wall and it's spinning you around, right? You stick to the wall. Yes, centrifugal force, quote unquote, is you can't tell the difference between centrifugal force and gravity.
Or a spaceship that is constantly accelerating, which means constantly pushing out more energy at 9.8 meters per second per second. Will feel the same to you as being on the Earth.
Right.
So what you have is you have a situation.
So that's acceleration and gravity. How's time equivalent to gravity?
Because you see the same effect. You see time slowing from the perspective of somebody in outer space in the same manner for the person who's accelerating versus the person who's on the planet.
Oh, so gravity is equivalent to acceleration. But you're saying time is equivalent to speed.
No,
it's
I'm
not
saying,
acceleration.
I'm not saying time is equivalent to speed. That's not what I said.
Okay. Then what did you say?
I said time is equivalent to
gravity.
Gravity.
But that doesn't make sense.
Yes, it does.
Explain. Make it make sense.
All right.
Why am I an idiot, Greg?
Okay. All right. I toss a ball to you. Okay. I throw a football to you. I throw it to you. In a straight line, say 100 feet, how long does it take?
You want me to tell you how long it takes?
Just give me a rough estimation. A second, right? Maybe less. Something around, you know. Doesn't take long.
100 feet. Like 8 seconds.
8 seconds? Is that
be my guess.
Okay, whatever. Now, instead of tossing it to you on a straight line, I toss it to you in a large parabola, a high parabola. It still gets to you. How long does it take?
It takes longer.
How long? Give me a number.
15 seconds.
Okay. Can I toss it to you in that same parabola trajectory, making it take 8 seconds?
Yes, 8 seconds is a long estimate for 100 feet. But anyway, I'm drunk.
Can I toss it to you in that parabola direction and make it take that... The time, the 8 seconds. Can I do that?
If you had more gravity.
No, I'm talking about the same situation.
No.
We're on the same planet. Can I toss it to you in a straight line and make it take 15 seconds?
No.
So there's a fundamental relationship.
Well, unless you change the atmosphere of the gravity.
There's a fundamental relationship between gravity and time.
Well, there's a relationship of time, atmospheric pressure... Density,
there's a relationship
gravity.
To how things move in time and how things move in space in a gravitational situation. This is general relativity. It's a hard subject. It takes years and years and years of study to understand this. But this is why it took so long. This is why special relativity is easy and general relativity is hard. Time and gravity are the same thing.
Not the same thing.
They are. Time and gravity are as
I understand how they're linked, but how can you call them the same thing?
Okay, so the same thing is a little bit hyperbole, but it's a little bit like It's a little bit like saying energy and matter are the same thing. I'm saying the equivalent of that. Yeah, it's over-expressing what the equation says. There's a conversion factor. So they're not the same thing. But
well, no, okay, so here you're just being a dick, right? Because, yes, energy can be converted to matter, and then I wouldn't disagree that time could be converted to gravity with the whole, you know, mass, feet of light, right. All that shit, you know, more gravity, time moves slower.
Right. Okay, so what I'm saying
but
is...
But what you're saying, you're baiting me with the way you're saying it.
What I'm saying is that because of this energy matter equivalence with the conversion factor, you can look at energy and matter the same way, just with a different viewpoint. You'll get slightly different numbers, but you'll always get the same number for the same version.
Well, why didn't you say that 15 minutes ago? You were baiting me until just now.
I'm not baiting you. I'm trying to... I was not clear. I apologize for not being as clear. It's hard for me to get these across because these are things that are stuck and flying around in my brain at 100 miles an hour, and I'm trying to catch them and grab a little piece to explain, and it's hard. I thank you for keeping me on the on point and keeping it instructive, but I'm not trying to bait you. I'm trying to explain my point here. But yeah, so. The point being that energy and matter, you can look at it through the same through a different glass and see, you ultimately will get the same answer.
Energy condenses the matter. Right. So you could say something like, so let me try to come to this thing. I get a little bit of what you're saying. Let me try to solidify it just a little bit here. Mm-hmm. So what Greg's talking about is, when you're traveling close to the speed of light, time slows down. But see that, I'm just talking through it myself now, yeah. Right? That speed, not acceleration. Acceleration is indistinguishable from gravity in, these aspects.
No, this is where you're wrong. Let me clarify.
You're talking about traveling.
If you're traveling close to the speed of light, constant, then it's equivalent to not moving at all, essentially. Then your relative point to another person is the same. They're okay. Traveling.
I mean, I understand how timing.
Acceleration
I understand,
is where it.
I understand
a factor,
how timing,
not constant speed.
I understand
acceleration
how,
is the only.
I understand how time and speed are linked. I understand how acceleration and gravity are linked. I don't understand how acceleration and gravity are linked to time and speed.
Well, we know that acceleration and gravity are linked, and we know that gravity and time are linked. And therefore, acceleration and time are linked because
you say that, but I don't comprehend. I don't see anything that links those two.
All right, the twin paradox. Let's go back to the twin paradox. Let's fall back on our favorite, our old favorite. The twin paradox, one person leaves on a spaceship, comes back, they were going really fast, they come back, they are much younger than the person who stayed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the question for you, assuming that acceleration does not play a factor here. Why does their moving make any difference to this person? From this person's relative point, from the person on rocket ship, it's the person on Earth that is moving away really fast, and they're staying still. Why does the shift happen?
That's one thing I've wondered. I'm not sure.
The answer is that A is the one accelerating. A is the one that's moving away and then turning around and coming back.
Okay, so I have wondered this, and the way I figured, they must mean... It's not just the other twin, the twin on your right there, or on your left, the twin on my right. It's also everything. It's the buildings, it's the other people, it's the rest of the environment, right? That twin has stayed static with everything around him, where this twin rocket ship back, and now he's back in this environment where he's with all the things that didn't travel, right?
No, that's not what's going on. It's not that you're coupled with your environment, although it's a very quantum mechanical way of looking at things. It's a very bright thing to assume.
I mean, because it's all about frame of reference. Happening. I mean, it's all frame of reference, right? But who's moving away from who?
But to person on rocket B, that whole coupled system is moving away just as
well. Just right,
fast,
but so. He comes back and he meets his twin on the planet, and so the twin's anchored to the planet. The twin's anchored to everything on the planet, and so that whole planet is looking at the other twin who went on the rocket ship and came back, and that's why.
Well,
he's
okay,
younger.
Ignore the planet part. The twin's on the same exact rocket ship. It just stays it just stays in space somewhere. And twin B on the rocket ship goes away and then comes back. wouldn't be a
so there was energy burned on the Wentrin's rocket, expended energy to travel.
It accelerated. And it made a course correction and changed and turned back.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the time dilation comes into play. Time dilation occurs because of acceleration, not because of straight movement. This is a very important part of relativity, and it doesn't really get expressed much, and I understand the confusion. But that means that time and acceleration...
Okay. You're starting to get me there. Hold on. Let me think. Okay, right. Obviously, to start to move away, there's acceleration. To get close to the speed of light, there's a lot of acceleration. So that's a lot of gravity equivalence. And...
Then think about inertia. You have inertia. You have to slow down, which in this sense is essentially a form of acceleration, just in the opposite direction, and then come back the other way. Because your momentum is conserved.
Right, so...
The momentum has a directionality to it.
So it's not traveling at the speed of light, close to the speed of light. It's accelerating to the speed of close to speed of light that causes this time dilation.
Yes.
Why don't they fucking say that?
Because it's confusing.
Now, here's a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Say you travel to 5 nines the speed of light, right?
Yeah.
Say you travel 10 light years or you travel 100 light years.
I don't know if 5 nines will give enough Lorentz factor, but I'll... Well,
okay. Yeah. 5 nines, 12 nines.
100, now you're talking about
199 nines.
Okay. Now you're talking. Now you're talking.
And you travel... 10 light years?
Mm-hmm.
And you travel 50 light years?
Mm-hmm.
Same amount of time dilation, though.
No, because it still takes time for you to get 10 light years, 50 light years, from the perspective
of... But it's the same amount of acceleration, right? It's the same amount of acceleration change. Same delta.
Yes.
But you're traveling further, so there's more dilation? But the dilations, you said the dilation is related to the
dilation, the lambda factor is the same because the dilation is based on your, but you've been traveling for longer. So that lambda has more and more. Of
it. But it's not multiplied. It's just added.
Right.
So
right.
It's 40 more years plus the delta. So 10 years versus 50 years, there's the delta of going to 12 nines, the speed of light. And then just plus lambda, the distance.
The delta would be changed. Lambda would be lambda is the Lorentz factor.
By delta, time I mean for delta, I just mean the change in speed, right? You're going from a steady state to 12 nines to zero, back to 12 nines, back to zero.
If you got to a certain point, got to a certain speed. Relative to position A, and then stopped accelerating, you would stop having a lambda. Once you stop accelerating, your lambda stops.
I don't understand what you mean by Lorentz. I don't know what the Lorentz factor of lambda is.
Once you stop accelerating, mm-hmm. then it's equivalent for me to say you're moving it away, and for you to say I'm moving away at this particular speed. Time dilation stops being a factor once you stop accelerating.
Okay. I'm just thinking through the frame of reference part, like how does the universe distinguish the difference of who's moving away from who? And I guess it has to do with the energy consumed or something, but I'm trying
right.
to...
Right, it's the energy in the system. And when you're accelerating, you're putting more energy in the system. When you have mass around the system, you're essentially putting more energy into the system. It's a weird type of energy that we don't quite understand, this negative energy, but there's more energy being put into the system.
So if you are traveling, if you accelerate... I guess the rate of acceleration matters, huh?
Sure.
Okay, so help me, talk me through this.
Okay.
If you can.
Yeah.
Say it takes you 1 year to get from zero to 12 nines.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you travel 8 years, and then you take 1 year to get back to zero. So a 10-year trip. Mm-hmm. So a 20-year round trip, right? And say you have the same trip. It takes you a year to get up to speed. You travel for 48 years, 1 year to slow down, and back. So a 100-year round trip. It's person A and person B is going to be...
Well, so for person A, that 1 year time would be would have that time dilation effect. Then the time in which you're cruising, there's no time dilation effect. Then the slow down, there is a time dilation effect. Mm-hmm. So for time dilation.
So it's the same dilation. It's the same dilation for both trips because you accelerate the time.
But then you add the amount. The cruise time.
Transit time.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Gotcha.
That's relativity. That's why general relativity took Einstein 8 more years to do.
Okay, so let's see. Time is gravity. Do I still have an argument or a problem with that? Time is gravity. I need to do this on a not in the post show.
When else are we going to talk about it?
Oh, so here's something to talk about. Went to the doctors last week to do the consult for a vasectomy, right? So I sit in the waiting room, and I'm like, physician's assistant will be in to talk to you. Physician's assistant walks in. She looks like a stripper on her day off. High heels, tattoo on her foot, mini skirt, cleavage showing. The yinzer hair and the hooker eyeshadow is a little much.
Describe to me the yinzer hair.
Like spiral permy thing, big bangs.
Okay.
But like she's talking and I'm like, maintain eye contact. Don't be scoping her out and shit. But she's like hot, like pretty good looking. Holy fuck. And she's like, okay, drop your pants. Gotta make sure, So she's like, the hottest chick that has ever touched my balls.
Okay.
Touched my balls on Tuesday. The hottest chick that will ever touch my balls.
That's making assumptions. You don't know.
I would place a bet on this one.
Okay.
It's all downhill from here. It's just not fair. She's dressing pretty... Like, doctor, physician assistant, dressing pretty slightly, grab my ball. I think she's an evil bitch who just wants to see how many boners she can, pop on a day or something like that.
Did you get a boner?
I got a little...
You got a semi?
Slightly engorged. Nothing standing up.
You're getting a semi.
Nothing to make it stand up. Right. No sleuths, right? Yeah. But, oh my God, it was like... She walked in. I was like, what the fuck? Put some scrubs on or something. You dump yourself up. Oh, my God.
A doctor's place is no place for you to get aroused.
It's just not fair.
Not fair? Why is it not fair?
I don't know. It just...
Why is it not fair?
It's like the most impotent thing ever, though. It's like, this hot chick is like touching your junk. I don't know.
That's even better than a strip club.
I guess.
Touching your junk.
I guess.
And you didn't have to pay for it, but you only paid $10 for it, right?
Yeah, exactly. It only cost $10.
You just go around, scope out places with hot chicks and be like, yeah, I need my balls checked.
I need another consult for the vasectomy. Yeah. Can I get the physician's assistant? What's her name again? I just could not believe what she was wearing. I mean,
yeah, that's a
slutty stripper shoes, tattoo of a flower on her foot. The mini skirt was up to when she sat down. I was looking up in there and shit. I wasn't expecting the whole drop your pants part. It was weird enough when she's talking about how they're taking the vas deferens and curling them apart like this and shit. It's all very mundane to her. She does it 10 times a day. Sure. It's blah, blah, blah. And I'm sure touching balls are very mundane to her too.
Yeah.
But like, I'm like, so it's time.
Was she
like,
compliment? Was she like, "No, these are nice balls"?
She didn't say that. But I'm like, put my hands behind my back. Like I'm just like thinking like baseball. Like I don't want to like. Maybe I should like just pop the sticky.
Yeah, I'm maybe sure she's seen it before.
Maybe she would like start.
Yeah, right. She was just trying to see if you were up for it, and you weren't. She would have been like, And then all of a sudden, the porn music would be
biggest like, mistake of my life right there. Maybe that was the biggest mistake of my life. Not going, ba-doing.
Like, ooh. I see you're the doctor.
One of those horrible
what
porn
can you
lines.
Do with this?
One of those horrible porn lines, yep.
And then it turns into aggressive.
I mean, it's not just like your general physician. It's the ball doctor. You know? It's like, what the fuck? But, oh well. Put a couple bills in the spank bank. So
there you go. And soon your bank will be un... You won't be able to choose any more babies. Boy, that could be way off subject because I was going to continue my
thought. I looked online to see if there was any like pictures of this person online. I'd show you if there was. Uh-huh. I couldn't find anything. She went to Gannon University, blah, blah, blah. Couldn't find anything about her. She is like almost spookily non-existent on the internet. That sounds really stalky, doesn't it?
Well, so getting back to my point, if you don't mind. I mean, unless you're more and talking.
I just got to pee a little bit, but I can...
We can pause.
All right. Find the pause button. And
we were just talking about the Sharknado that happened recently. And...
When I saw Sharknado, I thought Snarknado. I'm like, that's more up my alley. Tornado of snarkiness.
Let me... briefly, at least, just get back to my point, because I think there's something interesting in this. See, what I've been reading stuff about, and there are people who have ideas about entropic gravity, and if you can link entropic gravity, then time and gravity are linked, so you can have entropic time. What does that mean? Why is that interesting to me? Because it provides some explanatory power as to why things like evolution happen. Why systems evolve. Why there is entropy in behind us, or rather, there's more entropy in front of us than there is behind us. Essentially, time is working as like a sieve. It's pushing down upon us, and only those things which can hit it in the right way will get through. 99.9% of all life that ever exists on the planet is gone. 99.9% of all species that ever exist on this planet are gone. It's a remarkable sieve.
That's a crazy way of looking at things. I mean, like, you're not quite distilling down to a single person's life, but like, there could be a person who's immortal, right? Because of something, you know,
or a more likely a cell that's immortal, or you know, some sort of bacteria that's immortal in some way, because it's just managing to get through all the things of this sieve, and this sieve is constantly changing, so it has to adapt really a lot, and that's what evolution does, is it adapts to face this sieve. The universe now contains 5% of what we can tell we're made of, baryonic matter. The sieve is working remarkably well. There's something about that should be describable scientifically, and it isn't yet. And so it's in the realm of philosophy right now.
I was listening to a Radiolab podcast. Radiolab, they had Brian Greene on. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the best things I've heard Brian Greene talk about. I think I've talked about this before, when I heard him say when he wrote his first book, The Elegant Universe, he didn't know what the fuck he was talking about, you know, like, so he admits that, you know, it was a little goofy and whatnot, but he was, oh man.
Well, yeah, the ideas in The Elegant Universe are wrong. We know that now. String theory is not wrong. String theory was a stepping stone on the way to other theories and may be completely... insignificant in terms of what it tells us about the universe, but the methods that we developed to analyze string theory along the way may be very helpful to understand the universe in the real world.
Then, and so the basic, I can't remember enough to really quote anything, but there, the host of Radiolab, Peter Krolwich, was that Peter Krolwich? I think so. I was talking with Brian Greene. And there was this other article talking about the whole multiverse thing and like that and whatnot. And talking about how, you know, how all kinds of aspects could change in these multiverses. You know, Brian Greene was taking upon, I use this loaded word very carefully, or maybe intentionally, a faith that mathematics is the constant. You know, that mathematics is consistent throughout these universes, right? And the host, Peter, was kind of pinging him on that. Like, you know, you're taking this on faith. There's no evidence or anything like that. And Brian said, mathematics is the most consistent language that we have to describe things. And maybe, you know, maybe there's this alien race who will meet someday. And I'm like, oh, you're still stuck on mathematics. That's not the way to describe the universe. There's this. You know, but you know, until then, mathematics is the way to describe things.
Didn't I say that a few? You questioned me a couple weeks ago when I said that. When I said we may find something beyond mathematics, you said beyond mathematics. What do you mean? I said I don't know. It's just a pattern that has developed. We've been able to establish things. It reminds me a lot of specular reflection. Do you have a pen? Where's the pen go? Okay, you are very familiar with the double slit experiment.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Right. So a photon, one photon comes through and essentially goes through, has the possibility of going through both splits and then getting diffracted. Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically specular reflection in a nutshell. What happens when a photon goes through a material that slows it down? You're told a couple things. You're told in one sense that it bounces around atoms until it comes out, and that's what slows it down. That's not what's actually happening. If it were, then you'd see
coming out different angles.
Coming out all different angles, but like if you had a laser beam, it all comes out the same way. What's actually happening from a quantum mechanical perspective is specular reflection. It is taking every possible path it can take. It's a superposition, but all these possible paths you can take are interfered with by the other possible paths. So the only ones that survive are the ones that force it to go straight. This is the same thing as happening with the double slit experiment. It's taking all the possible paths, but the only one that survives are the ones that aren't interfered with. So this is where the multiverse comes in. This is where the idea of the many worlds comes in, that if it's taking every possible path, then what if we take that idea seriously and it is taking every possible path? It's just every possible path is bound up into one state, and as soon as it hits a point where it takes possible paths, all these decohere into different universes. And we're just in the one universe where it's taking the path that we see it move. That's where multi-state, that's where many universes comes in. It's an idea which is take the equation seriously. I don't like it philosophically, but I can't say that it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where the idea comes from.
Well, I'm sorry that I forgot that you beat Brian Greene to the punch that, you know, there might be something more than mathematics that, you know, truly describes nature. But until then, yeah, it's the best thing we got.
Or describes it in a better way that will be beyond, you know, quasi-humaha, whatever we call it, whatever it is that describes nature better. But that's all we have right now. And mathematics, like I said, tell us it takes every possible solution, but they all interfere with each other. It's really weird quantum mechanics. Really weird.
One thing we're talking during a pee break is a lot of people are naming their baby Khaleesi from Game of Thrones. And the thing I found most interesting was that nobody named their kid Khaleesi from the books. It was only after the TV show aired.
But and like I said, I think
But nobody. I mean, zero. It's like, well, what?
I don't know whether the number is actually zero, although it probably is. But let me put it this way. The books were never as popular as the Harry Potter books. And there were kids who were naming their kids Hermione
mm-hmm.
before there were Harry Potter movies. So take that with you. I think, like I said, in the Game of Thrones books, in the game, what you get is different than the show, in that you get mind's eye chapters. Every chapter, you know, chapters come from the mind's eye of the person, or you're getting the internal monologues of the person. So you get a little bit deeper into them, and when you do get that deep into somebody, you're less likely to name them something if they're not just badass all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Khaleesi is much more badass all the time in the books, in the TV show, than she is in the books.
Right.
She questions herself all the time in her internal monologue. She does badass things, but she's questioning herself. She's constantly not sure which road to take. You know, it's less badass to do that than it
right.
is.
Right, then just be badass.
Just to be badass. Yeah.
Right. Cool. All right. Well, we've been at this for an hour and 10 minutes in the post show. It is 1:30 in the morning, so I guess it's time to wrap this up.
I guess so. You know, we'll do another show to save to bank.
I don't think so.
Yeah, we're gonna have for 2 weeks. There's not gonna be any shows coming up. There'll be a show coming up. There's going to be a show next week, and then there will be 2 weeks of showlessness, because I'm going to be away, and then Jeff's going to be away.
Yep, that sounds about right. I'm pulling up a calendar here right now, so let's see, month view. What's today? Today is the 14th.
Yeah, so I'll be away from the 20th to the 29th. So I'll be away from Saturday the 20th to...
Yeah. And I'm away till the 5th.
To the 5th. So hopefully we'll get a show quickly after that, so we can talk about our various vacations. And then we will be back. So we'll also mention this on the main show next week.
And actually, tentatively, my vasectomy is scheduled for the 9th. But I think I'm going to postpone it till September. Because Heather's like... August 9th doesn't seem like a great weekend just to sit around on the couch all weekend. You know, there's just too many things to do.
Okay.
So I'm probably going to postpone it until the weather starts to turn a little bit.
And until when TV starts would be a great time.
That would be a good time.
That's later in September.
So. Well, I mean, I got plenty of media to watch, right? I mean, it's going to be a Friday, true. Saturday, Sunday, true. Where I can't lift more than 10 pounds right. and I'm not supposed to walk.
Balls on ice, yeah.
On a vice or a towel. You actually got to take like tight underwear or a jock strap to the surgeon. They won't snip you, like, if you bring boxer shorts. They want something supportive to hold your little boys up there once you get snipped.
Nice.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, we'll talk to you soon then. Thanks for listening to this, whoever you are.
God have mercy on your soul.
I'm assuming it was one or two people.
God have mercy on your soul.
We love you.